Welcome to the 7th episode of the Indigenous Hour. Today we are podcasting once again from the Puistola studios in Helsinki, where we began this podcast program in April. Theme of the hour is the situation of Sami people in Finland. In particular, their ongoing struggle for greater recognition of their human rights by the state of Finland, that incidentally will celebrate the centenary of its independence this December. In that sense, this Indigenous Hour episode hopes to also make a modest contribution to the discourse around Finland 100. My guest of the hour is a young Sami activist, Aslat Holmberg. He's 29 years old, but has already done a lot. He has represented the Sami Youth Organization of Finland at the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. He has also attended meetings of the Convention on Biological Diversity and much more. He's also currently a member of the Sami Parliament in Finland and has published opinion pieces in the leading Finnish daily Helsingin Sanomat. Aslat has also stood out with his innovative and original approaches to civic activism, which we will shortly discuss in greater detail. In the meantime, though, welcome Aslat to the Indigenous Hour.
Thank you.
So, to my knowledge, the traditional opening question when Sami people meet is to ask, where are you from? So, can you tell a bit more about the area where you grew up? Just to set the stage for us, in terms of the nature and the people.
Yeah, so I come from the village of Nyörkkän, or Nuorgam in Finnish, and it's a rather small village in the municipality of Otsajoka, Utsjoki. And Nyörkkän is situated in the Teatnu River Valley. So the river plays a very important role there in the people's lives. And I would say that people are there because of the river. All the villages in the area are in the river valley. And so it's a small village of about 160 people. It has a primary school. And I had my primary school there. Then I went to Otsajoka for secondary and college. So it's rather peaceful place since there is not many people. A lot of shops. Mostly people from Norwegian side come to shop there because everything is cheaper on Finnish side. So trade plays also an important role. And the population of the municipality doubles during the summertime because of salmon tourism, or at least that used to be the case before this year and the new regulations. So I guess that would be briefly it.
At home, did you speak Sami language?
Yeah. So it's my other mother tongue. I've spoken Sami, not Sami, with my father since childhood. But then Finnish with my father, with my mother.
Hmm. You mentioned salmon fishing. Can you tell something about the importance of salmon fishing, the traditional way of salmon fishing for your personal identity, but also the Sami people who live around the Tenno River area?
Yeah. So I would say that for a lot of Sami, it's important that you can get something directly from nature. And especially if you talk to older people, then it's one of the main values that they have, that you should be able to provide for yourself. Like pirkejupmi is the Sami word for it, like managing with what you have. So salmon is one of the most important natural genetic resources we have, and salmon fishing, it's obviously a seasonal thing, but it plays an important role in the food security of people, since a lot of people fish for their own food and for their families. And often Sami, when you ask them that, so you are a Sami, and if you try to get deeper into it, and they can tell you like what kind of Sami there are. They a coastal Sami or a reindeer herding Sami? So for me, since We have stopped reindeer herding about 15 years ago, so I'm not involved in that anymore. So I often say that I'm salmon fishing Sami. And for me, it's very important that I get to go to Teatnu with my father to learn what he has learned during his long time that he has been fishing there. So it's my time with my father where I learn the language and I get to know the area and the river and obviously, most importantly, the fishing itself. Like, what do you need to do if you want to catch some salmon? Because I would say that we have a lot of respect for salmon. We consider it to be very intelligent fish. And that you have to be able to trick the salmon into going to a net. Because it can see the net, so it doesn't go there unless you manage to trick it into a position where it kind of has to go there. So, yeah, I would say that it has an important part also for creating like my connection to the area and to the nature, because when I get something from the nature, that's when I'm kind of in contact with it, and I can get something for myself to sustain myself directly from nature. So it also brings this feeling of self-sufficiency and not being dependent on something. Because there is something that I can just get myself, and it's not impacted by something that happens outside our region. So, yeah.
But salmon fishing has also been referred to, or maybe even you yourself have talked about how that is more than self-sufficiency, how that is really part of the culture.
Yeah, for me, as I said, I often introduce myself as a salmon fisher. So it tells like what is my way of getting something from the nature. And it's also the very basis of the river Sami culture there. Because that is the time when we go to do the Kolkatepmi, which is the fishing with moving nets, drift nets. So that's when the people of the village at least used to gather to one spot, and because there is one place where you start to do the fishing, and then you have a gathering there and you wait for your turn to go. So it's also, it plays an important part in the social life of the region.
Kind of a community building activity.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure, mm-hmm. It used to mm-hmm. be. It was declining strongly also before the new regulations came there, but now it's not such an active practice anymore. But definitely self-sufficiency and in general the culture and the knowledge about how should you be able to sustain yourself from nature, and that's an important part of it.
You are right now among the different roles that you perform in life. You are also a social activist or a political activist or maybe a Sami politician. I don't know exactly what's the best way, but let's say you certainly are an activist. So when and how did you become involved in this Sami activism? Can you point to a specific moment in time when you realized that you want to actually do something for the Sami people?
I suppose it started a bit slowly. I mean, it wasn't like one specific point. I mean, I can name a point when I went to the first Sami youth gathering. That was, I'm not even sure, 5, 6, 7 years ago. So that was kind of the first time when I got together in a more organized way with other Sami youth to discuss what are our issues. And I would say that there is a need for active people in the organizational world. So when I went to this event, then people saw that, there is this young guy who might be active. So then I was sucked into this youth council of the Sami parliament in Finland. So then I became a member of that, Actually, I think it happened pretty much at the same time. I was also in the Finnish Sami youth organization, and now to think of it, I suppose that was the first more of an organized thing that I joined into. But anyway, once I got into the board of this organs, then I was kind of sucked into it. I mean, I got to know more about the situation in different areas, and I got to know more people, and also it opened the door to go to other Sami regions, like in other countries, Norway and Sweden and also Russia. So I would say that once I started getting a more wider idea of what's happening in Sápmi, then I kind of felt the urge to do something and be active about things.
What was your main driving force or motivation to get into activism? Was it a pure, a pure concern for, you know, the Sami people, wanting to do something good for your people? Was it also some kind of like a personal ambition to become somebody, to get into the Sami parliament, or you know, get into politics eventually, perhaps, or something like that?
Well, since you talk about activism, then I would say that activism per se came to my life later on.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't actually call this organizational work activism. So activism was perhaps the next step when I was becoming to realize that that the political way of trying to influence wasn't being all that effective. So then when we started coming up with new ideas, new ways of making an impact, that's when the activism came to play a role. I would say that one of the main driving forces was definitely a worry of what's happening, and listening to people and seeing what's going on, then I kind of felt that I just have to open my mouth at some points. And so it wasn't in a way at any point really a conscious decision that I made that now I will become a Sami politician. But it was just mm-hmm. that things were happening and I felt like I have to say something about it and try to have an impact. So that was kind of what started it. And then when I became what's it called when you run for as a candidate for Sami parliament, then I kind of felt that was a natural step to take, since I was already quite heavily involved in Sami issues in the organizational level. So it was only natural to me to go to try to get to Sami parliament to see what that is all about.
Mm-hmm.
So because that is the officially the highest level of Sami self-determination
mm-hmm.
In the Nordic countries. So I felt like I really need to see it from the inside to be able to know what it's all about and see if that is a way that we could really make an impact on something. And since that really didn't seem to be the case, then that's when the activism part came along.
Are you pleased with where you are right now in terms of your activist / politician career? Do you feel like you're in the right place doing the right thing?
Yeah, I would say that I do. One of the titles that you didn't mention in the beginning is that I'm also a vice president of the Sami Council, which represents the highest level of Sami civil society, and also has played an important part in also in the international field of indigenous rights movement, all the way from when it was established in the 1956. So once I've gotten to be also part of the Sami Council and be in the executive board, then for me that plays also a very important role, since Sami Council has been basically the initiative force that Sami parliaments have been established from. Sami Council has worked for that as well. And yeah, for me it it feels like a good good organ to work with, because I feel that the Sami parliaments are very tied to the systems of the states, and it's very limited what can they do and so on. So yeah, I would have to say that I'm quite happy where I am. And obviously we have mentioned this more official positions that I have, but I have to say that it plays a very important role for me also that I'm a member of this Ellostetno activist group.
We'll get later to Ellostetno in more detail. But right now I would like to elevate the subject of our conversation here in the sense that let's discuss Finland and how Finland, the state of Finland, has been and is treating the Sami people. So based on my experiences at the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, I have observed what, to me at first at least, was a bit of a paradox. So on the one hand, the Sami people of Finland, just as you know, in Sweden and Norway, are enjoying one of the highest living standards among world's indigenous peoples, if not the highest. They live in countries that are generally known to respect and advocate for human rights worldwide. Certainly, they are not known for repressing their people, unlike some other kind of usual suspects, you know, like the kind of the notorious human rights violators worldwide. We don't have to mention them now here. Now, the Sami parliament in Finland also, along with the Sami parliaments in Sweden and Norway, are often referred to as good practices of how indigenous peoples realize their right to self-determination. But yet, there appears to be some kind of dissatisfaction or disappointment among Sami people, certainly in the political community, let's say, towards Finland's treatment, historical treatment, and also current treatment and policies towards the Sami people. So, for example, when one goes to the UN Permanent Forum meetings where Sami activists, you know, people like you, speak and make their statements from the floor, then you know they are known for their sharp, quite stinging criticism towards the government of Finland. So I remember quite well how the chair of the Sami Youth Association of Finland, Petra Laidi, made quite a powerful statement accusing Finland of not respecting indigenous people's rights. And this is just one example. So this has been going on for a while. And so the criticism itself usually takes quite concrete forms, for example, criticizing Finland for not ratifying ILO 169 or something else. But it seems that there is a more general problem or issue that the Sami people have behind those concrete demands. So can you tell perhaps a novice who is not so familiar with the Sami politics, what is the problem that the Sami people of Finland have with the state?
Yeah. Well, if we're going to draw a more general picture, then I would say that simply it's that our right to self-determination is violated. And I would say that it's a relatively new issue in the international field, this indigenous people's right to self-determination. And what should that include? But it cannot be a meaningless hearing that the Sami parliament is invited to a negotiating meeting, or which often is the case in Finland, that the Sami parliament is requested to write a statement about a legislation that impacts Sami. So, simply put, the problem is that we don't have a say on decision making that impacts our lives, that is steering our lives. The decisions about the use of natural resources in Sami areas, they are done not in Sami areas, but I would say that the biggest decisions are done in Helsinki or Oslo and so on. the decisions about what should we teach our Sami children in schools, we don't have a real say to that. The national curricula ties also Sami schools or schools in Sami area in Finland, so which often the national curricula doesn't it barely mentions Sami. So far from us being able to teach our children things based on Sami values and based on our priorities, like what do we want our children to learn. So there are a lot of issues, language, healthcare.
Well, but what you're mentioning now is kind of current issues. But how about history? Are there some important unresolved issues from the history that the state of Finland perhaps has not duly recognized or resolved?
Yeah, I think it's the classic case of land rights and water rights, which often is the main issue with indigenous peoples. So since the states came to Sami areas, I think there has been a strong arrogance towards Sami, that the states should be able to govern the areas. They should decide how our societies are structured and governed. So I think that's the main issue historically, how the states approach Sami as if it was something that they can just take over their jurisdiction. And obviously it's a very, very wide spectrum of things that happened, all the way from when the churches came and our own structure of our siita or our villages disappeared because suddenly the church became the highest authority of the areas, and then later on internat school,
residential schools.
Residential schools, they definitely played a role, since Sami children were taken at a very young age and away from their families and forbidden to speak their language. So there are a lot of these issues that have left really deep scars to Sami, and definitely we're not over that. I mean, it's some heavy burden that we as a society are still carrying.
Has the state of Finland apologized for some of that, or made efforts to at least acknowledge that mistakes were made in the past?
No, not the state, no. I mean, I think the church has done something in those lines, but as in state bodies, there hasn't been any kind of acknowledgement of any kind of wrongdoing in the past.
Okay. Now, I also wanted to briefly touch on the Sami Parliament of Finland that you're a member of, and to better understand to what extent this truly is an instrument of exercising the Sami people's right to self-determination. Outwardly, it seems like it is indeed a parliament, and it certainly, you know, gets internationally the respect of an indigenous people's parliament. But when one starts digging into what the actual powers or authority or mandate of the Sami Parliament of Finland is, it appears quite limited. And there is one particular issue that has been raised, including by myself actually, maybe a year and a half ago, was that it seems that there is even one higher authority than the Sami Parliament for deciding who is and who is not Sami, and that authority is the state of Finland, right? Because in questionable or controversial cases, it is the higher administrative court of Finland that can decide who is Sami and who is not Sami. In other words, who can vote in Sami parliament elections and who can run.
Yeah, I think it shows very clearly in general what is the position of the so-called Sami self-determination in Finland. If, as you say, the highest body to decide who is a Sami and who gets to vote, people who represent Sami in the highest level, if that is decided by Finnish people, a non-Sami people or persons, then that shows you what's the level of Sami self-determination. If we cannot even decide, like whom do we consider to be part of our nation?
Yeah, of course, this goes very much against the specific articles of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, where it is very clearly stated that it is up to the indigenous peoples and their representative bodies to determine who is member of the community and who is not. So this is just a classical example of a collective right of an indigenous people, but it doesn't seem to be really honored in Finland, right?
No, and that's one good example and one of the clearest examples how Finland, even though they can talk in support of indigenous people's rights, and there are many cases where you can pinpoint exact actions that they have taken, which are clearly violations of United Nations yeah. Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People.
But in a way, isn't it very logical that it is the case? Because, for example, the Sami Parliament of Finland operates under the mandate of the Act of the Sami Parliament adopted by the Parliament of Finland. Was it 2002 or anyway, it predated the adoption of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, which was 2007. And my personal observation when reading this act was that that it also predates the thinking that has evolved thereafter in a significant way, and Finland has not updated the Act of the Sami Parliament, or in general, its policies towards the Sami people to correspond to the UN Declaration.
Yeah, but even when there was the work of renewing the Act on Sami Parliament, and this exact topic was, I would say, the main issue that that dissolved the whole renewal of the Act process. So, and that was after the Declaration was adopted. So, I would say that there hasn't been much advancement on the national level, even after. In the international level, there have been some significant steps taken forward.
And why is that? Why is otherwise so modern and progressive and democratic state of Finland not updating its indigenous people's policies? Surely not because it doesn't know, what the UN Declaration says.
Yeah, but I think it's still, when we look in the bigger picture and the longer time scale, then I think it's a relatively new thing that indigenous peoples should have certain rights. And I would say that in Finland, Sami rights, it's more of minority rights than indigenous peoples' rights. Like, we have certain amount of cultural, you can call it self-determination or what. We can make some decisions about our culture, about our language, but what is the key difference between minority rights and indigenous people's rights is the right to self-determination. And obviously, as we talked before, one of the key aspects of that is the land rights issue and the right of the people to self-determination. And well, I think it just shows you what's the general approach towards Sami issues, how it's taken as a granted that non-Sami people should make the decisions that that govern our lives.
Hmm. On the other hand, globally, Finland has been very active and prominent as an advocate and supporter of indigenous people's rights. It has been leading several global processes, like this process to give a special status for indigenous peoples organizations at the UN, where the ambassador of Finland to the UN has been one of the co-chair of the group that develops the rules for that. So how, as a Sami activist, do you look at this kind of global advocacy for indigenous peoples conducted by the state of Finland?
Yeah, I'm almost tempted of approaching those people who represent Finland internationally and who advocate indigenous people's rights. I'm almost tempted of approaching them and saying that, why do you do this? Stop this, because this is not the reality in Finland. But then again, that wouldn't be of any use. And I mean, I would say that we've had a good collaboration with the Ministry of External Affairs in Finland. And I would say that they're rather progressive in indigenous people's rights issues. But obviously, they don't make the decisions on the national level. And yeah, it is clear that there are it's a different message that is given to outside world and what happens here in Finland. But
are you saying that different ministries within the state, within the Finnish government, are not quite in sync? That there are the more progressive and more reactionary ministries, and that they do not perhaps talk to each other enough, or even at all?
Yeah, definitely. There are huge differences between the ministries, and that can be read in the reports of the Sami Parliament, which are given on an annual basis. And as I said, with the External Affairs Ministry, we've had a pretty good collaboration. But when you come to national level and internal affairs, then the ministry that governs the Metsähallitus, the State Parks and Forests Agency, then that is the Ministry on Agriculture and Forestry. So then again, it is very clear that the relationship for that ministry is extremely bad. And often the so-called negotiations that we have with this ministry, then they don't lead to an agreement. And they're more just a hearing that is that you have to go through because the law says you have to do that. They don't always even do that, as was the case in with the Tietno agreement.
Excellent. So right now we're going to the next, perhaps the main topic or the central topic of this episode, which is the Teno, or as you say in Sami, Tietno, yeah? Tietno River Fishery Agreement, and the civic campaign Ellos Tietno that you, with your fellow activists, initiated earlier this year. So just maybe brief background from my side, you know, feel free to add, you know, the details, is that, well, basically, the Tietno River is the border river between Finland and Norway, located on traditional Sami lands. It is one of the biggest, or perhaps the biggest, river with of the Atlantic salmon stock in the world. And so last year, Teno River Fishery Agreement was signed between Finland and Norway, and it was ratified by parliaments of both states this year, 2017. Now, while one of the stated aims of this agreement was environmental protection, you know, in other words, to better protect the salmon stock from depletion due to overfishing, then for many Sami people and organizations, this agreement is violating the human rights of Sami people, whose traditional livelihoods and culture are being threatened by this agreement. And there also seems to be a procedural problem with the agreement, because according to the Sami Parliament of Finland, it was not properly consulted during design of the treaty. And in particular, the principle of free, prior and informed consent appears not to be properly followed by the state of Finland. And in the meantime, this Teno River Agreement case has attracted quite wide domestic and international attention, and even received a recommendation from the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues earlier this year, which I will quote. So this says, among else, that the Sami parliaments of Finland and Norway have informed the forum that the agreement was adopted without the free, prior and informed consent of the Sami. The forum requests the governments of Finland and Norway to renegotiate the agreement with the full and effective participation of Sami rights holders. There also is currently an ongoing discussion about whether the expert mechanism on the rights of indigenous peoples, EMRIP, should conduct a country visit to Finland to further investigate this issue. And of course, there is the campaign that you, with your fellow activists, started that we will discuss. So could you walk us through the main elements of this Teno River Agreement, correcting me if needed? So what was the goal that was set for it?
The goal was to limit the fishing so that those salmon populations in the river, in the watershed that are not doing very well, that they would be stronger in the future. That was obviously the main goal, and that was also goal for Sami. But as we know that the conclusions of the so-called negotiations, they are objected by all the Sami actors that have stated their views. It was objected by all the Sami who were involved in the negotiations. Both the Sami parliaments from Finland and Norway have objected it. In Norway, it was unanimously objected by the Sami parliament, which I suppose would be quite rare. So there are huge differences in how much the fishing should have been limited and whose fishing should have been limited. But already here in the beginning, I would say that even though obviously keeping the salmon population strong, it's a very key priority, then I would say that that is not the main issue in this discussion. Because the main point is that who should be able to govern the river, who should make the decisions on how the fishing is done. That is the main issue. Because I would say that there is no doubt that it should be Sami who make the decisions on how the fishing is done there. Because Sami have been fishing there way before the states were formed. So that is the main issue. And if we look at it from that that perspective, then we should have the right to govern it badly. If it's as it's claimed that we would have fished the salmon to extinction if the states wouldn't have come to protect us, then I would say that that's not even a relevant claim. Because in the right to self-determination, it's included that you can make bad decisions. And we can see Finland is a great example of this. They show that you can make bad decisions.
Can you tell more about the impact of this agreement on Sami people, including you as, I think, a rather relevant example of a group that is suffering as a result?
Yeah, so the traditional fishing, which we have three types of net fishing in the Tetno River, and which are the main way for the locals to get food from the river, then those traditional methods were limited by approximately 80%.
Wow.
Comparing to what was previous year, and for a long time the case. So it is very small amount that we can do this traditional way of fishing now. And personally, on my case, since I don't live permanently in the river valley, I'm studying now in Tromsø, so I'm not allowed to participate in the traditional way of fishing.
Not at all, like zero.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not possible for me to get the permission to take part in the net fishing.
Could you do it as a tourist, though? If you buy some license or...
Yeah, well, the net fishing is only for locals, so yeah, that would be okay. Completely out of out of question. But yeah, for tourist licenses, for what do you call it when you do it with the rods, and then yeah, I could buy tourist licenses for that. And if I was to fish my traditional part of about 4 kilometers. If I go with a boat and it's about 4 kilometers that I fish, then it would cost me 150 euros for one day to fish. So you can imagine what would be the expenses if I was to catch enough fish for the winter.
Hmm.
So basically, I would say that I've been completely denied my right to, mm-hmm. to fish mm-hmm. in my mm-hmm. home river.
Hmm. And so there is this very unfortunate and negative impact from the agreement. But then there is what you yourself said before. It's the the procedural aspect of how the treaty was negotiated. and specifically the notion of free, prior, and informed consent, which of course is one of the most fundamental principles in the UN Declaration. This is, you know, one of the best examples of how indigenous people's self-determination should be exercised. But in this case, apparently, this was not followed by the state. Certainly the Sami Parliament of Finland, and as you said, Norway, think so. On the other hand, the Finnish government maintains that free, prior, and informed consent was followed. So last December, I, with my permanent forum colleague Daily Sambo, we sent an inquiry to the government of Finland on this issue, just to ask whether and how, in their view, free, prior, and informed consent was followed, responding to the concern by the Sami Parliament of Finland. The reply that we received was very self-justifying, without admitting any mistakes. And just to quote from the reply, and this is a reply from the government of Finland, they said, among else, that the free, prior, and informed consent principle, recognized as a right of indigenous peoples, does not mean that indigenous peoples have the right of veto concerning decisions to be made, but that they are entitled to make demands concerning their procedures. Now, when I shared this reply with you later, then you rightly remarked that this is a wrong interpretation of FPIC. And specifically, you said, I think, a very interesting thing, that it diminishes FPIC to right to free speech, right? So do you have any more thoughts or comments about this?
Yeah, but yeah, I again think that that's a good example of what's the level of so-called Sami self-determination in Finland. And the position of the government is that it's a procedural right, that Sami should be able some way to take part in the procedure, be it that we send a letter to the government or that we sit in by the same table for some time to be able to voice our views. But as I said, I would say that the Sami self-determination, as it's practiced now in Finland, it's the freedom of speech. We have the right to make our views known. Whereas what I would say is key for the free, prior, and informed consent principle is that it's a material right, that you should actually be able to have an impact on decision making. And at some points, it does mean the right to say no. If a procedure impacts your culture so strongly as the Detno or Teno agreement did, then Sami should have the right to say that no, this is not the way we want our resources to be governed and our livelihood to be governed. So at some point, it has to include the possibility to truly have an impact in the outcome of negotiations. Because otherwise, it's just a matter of hearing. It's not negotiating if you just order a meeting and call a meeting and then you listen what they have to say and then the outcome is already decided before the meeting. And this has been realized also in official level of the government of Finland, like the rights counselor who is supposed to follow up if the legislation is done in accordance with the legislation that there is, then this counselor also pointed out that the Detno agreement was done without negotiating with the Sami parliament.
Yes, and also the Constitutional Committee of Finland has commented on that and I think saying that government at least partly neglected the obligation to consult with the Sami people. And also the Vice Chancellor of Justice has supported that view. So there have been actually parts of the state of Finland that have taken a more pro-Sami side on this. What is the current state of affairs? So, of course, the agreement has been ratified by the parliament. Is there a way to somehow send it back to the parliament to, I don't know, take away the ratification? Or what scenarios exist right now?
We have exchanged views with the current Minister of Agriculture and Forestry, who is responsible of this agreement, and he just pointed out that the negotiation process was a very long and time-consuming process, and at this point neither the state of Norway or Finland is willing to start the negotiations again. So that was the conclusion that he came to. So this the rights counselors notification and the constitutional committee's conclusions, then they just kind of point to what happened in the past, but they don't give you any promise of that any changes would happen in the future. So I would say that it's very difficult to work with that on a political level, because clearly there is no will to change what was done wrong before.
Is there a legal procedure to force the parliament or parliaments of both states to somehow revisit it or withdraw the ratification? Is it just a matter of lack of political will, or is it also legally very complicated to take the ratification back once it has already been done? Because I don't think it's like parliaments very often kind of renegotiate or, you know, but I don't know what's the legal term, but kind of like take back a ratification from a convention or a treaty.
I think legally speaking, it's 1 year that is the time if one of the parties decides to withdraw their consent to this agreement. It takes 1 year for the agreement to stop being in force. So it would be possible to decide today that, yeah, we will start new negotiations.
And this could be a unilateral decision by the Parliament of Finland.
Yeah.
And this is where currently political will appears to be lacking. But of course, this is not something that you would accept. So you have started with your fellow activists a highly innovative campaign called Elost Deatne, which has involved setting up a camp on a Deatne River island where a kind of a moratorium has been established, where you claim that this is the place where the traditional Sami law has supremacy over the law of Finland. There have been some cultural events highlighting this campaign. It has received quite good media coverage in Finland, also internationally. And you personally have conducted a kind of an act of civil disobedience. Can you tell a bit more about maybe how this campaign started and what the objectives of this campaign are?
Yeah, it happened when we realized that all the political means of trying to impact this fishing regulations, they were exhausted and they didn't bear any fruit. So when we realized that there is no political way of changing this at the moment, that we had to be innovative, we have to come up with a new approach to the issue. So that's when we came up with the idea that that we should argument strongly for international law and question the state authority on governing Deatne. So as you said, we declared a moratorium on this island of Cerresuolu, and we said that since the law, the act on fishing in Deatne, since it doesn't have any local support, then it is not in force here. It is done against the principles of international law. It violates our right to our culture, our right to self-determination. And that was the starting point. So we gathered to one island, we discussed what to do, and since the moratorium was established, then we lived there for the whole summer, and we had a lot of visitors come, a lot of activists from the region and from further away, artists, a lot of media. As you mentioned, we had a support concert for this cause, which also was helping to legitimize our cause and our approach. And
this is this was a concert where you got A-level stars from Finland, meaning you could tell more, because this wasn't just a Sami affair.
No, it wasn't. We did get one of the most prominent rap artists of Finland to come to Otsijoukka to support this cause. And it obviously helped us to get more attention. Like, why would this big star in Finland go to a small village in the very, very north?
That's Paleface, yeah?
Yeah, Paleface. Mm. But why would Paleface go to Otsijoukka to do a support concert? And it was very good. And he kept the discussion on a very principled level. And he was talking about the right to decide over the local issues. That was what he was talking about. Obviously, he's not an expert on death, no fishing or or this case per se, but he knew that as a principal, Sami should have the right to decide over their issues. Mm-hmm. And this was the point that he brought and helped us to gain some attention for this issue.
What has the campaign so far achieved? So it has been operating for, is it about a half a year now? What would you say are the main accomplishments so far?
This summer we were focusing, well, also there was a lot of nationwide media coverage, especially on Finnish side, in that sense, we did achieve making it known that there is an issue, there is something which is wrong, which we don't accept, and that it has to be changed. And we also managed to raise this whole discussion on Sami rights more to the national agenda, because I would say that it's not often discussed in the Finnish media. But perhaps even more importantly, what was achieved during the summertime was that we gathered the local people and we got their support and we got them to realize that this is really something wrong. Like, we, none of us does accept what has been done, and we have to do something to stop it, to reverse it. So I would say that important part of our work was that we did manage to make the local people wake up to think about this, that wait a minute, it cannot be that the states can just decide without knowledge of what are the impacts of this agreement to us. They cannot decide it if we don't agree on it. So I think we managed to kind of make the local people also to think that we should be able to decide over our own issues. And in this way, like, there was, as we call Ellos Tetno, a movement. So it's not a specific group of people, but it's more a movement. And this movement is trying to achieve self-determination, especially on local issues and the nature use.
How long will Ellos Tetno be going on? Is there an endpoint that has been determined already from the start, or could this go on for a long time? Or,
well, as is the case with the moratorium, then we have declared that it's in force until new regulations are in force for the fishing in Tetno, which have local support. Mm-hmm. So how long Ellos Tetno will work depends on that. But I mean, we have been working with similar issues with the Sami self-determination with the core group of Ellos Tetno before. So it's not like for the first time we got together and started thinking that how do we take steps to advance Sami rights. So we have been collaborating before as well. So even if Ellos Tetno would achieve the goal of getting an acceptable set of regulations, then I see that there is still a lot of things to work on.
There could be some other causes to work towards, yeah?
Or the main cause of really getting self-determination, mm-hmm. whatever mm-hmm. that would mm-hmm. mean in mm-hmm. the Sami mm-hmm. context, mm-hmm. then that yeah. would be the goal that we would have to work on even after the ethno agreement would yeah. be negotiated.
Would you like to mention names of some of your colleagues with the Elosta ethno who are behind it, just like who have been driving it, or ideologues, if you will?
Yeah, well, there have been many people who have come up with their face and name to public and given interviews on this case. So it has been myself and Baskanillas who have kind of been the spokespersons for this movement. But also really active members have been my cousin, Niljas Holmberg, Petra Laiti, whom you mentioned before, who's the chair of the Finnish Sami Youth Organization, who has been at the UN also bringing up this issue. There is Jenni Laiti, who has been known from the Sohpan terror group. There are more people on the local level also who have come up with their face and name. So I would say that we're approximately 10 people in the very core group. And many of them were very visible at the support concert.
Well, I would just like to congratulate you and, you know, your colleagues for developing this campaign, because I think it is one of the best examples of a very bold, principled indigenous people's activism and resistance that is happening right now, not just in our region, but I think worldwide. And it's something that I think also other indigenous peoples can learn from. And I sincerely hope that the movement will be successful and will reach its specific aim concerning the Dätnö River Agreement, but also, of course, working towards that bigger cause that you mentioned, the right to self-determination and exercising that right. My last question to you today is, where and how will you celebrate Finland's centenary on December 6th? What kind of thoughts and feelings?
I won't celebrate. I think I will be visiting my sister in Malta, and I will be celebrating her graduation. It happens to be, I believe, on 7th of December, so those are my plans. But as should be clear based on this discussion, then I think that the situation of Sami in Finland, it's not a very good one. It's not something to celebrate. And I don't mean that there wouldn't be anything to celebrate in Finland. Obviously, sometimes when we discuss about what is wrong, we can forget that there are a lot of good things as well. But definitely these recent developments with the Sami rights, they have been towards the wrong direction. So I'm not celebrating the state, for sure.
Well, thank you, Aslat, for this, I think, informative and also inspirational interview. Also, thank you to the listeners of the Indigenous Hour. This was actually the last episode of the first season. This, I think, was a nice way to wrap it up. If you like this episode, please share the link on social media, join our Facebook page, and subscribe to the Indigenous Hour on iTunes to get the past episodes, but also to be ready to receive new ones when they appear. So we may be back with more. For now, I would say goodbye, but we will finish with a Sami song, and Aslat, you can introduce the song.
Yeah, so we have quite a wide range of people gifted in different fields as part of our group, and we have many artists as well. So my cousin Niljas Holmberg, together with Sara Marielle Gööp-Peska, they made a song for the movement, which shares the name Elosta ethno. So that would be my request for a song to end this.
muiste mun saukilin kiitä joa palti. Tahtus jokti mietiltä. Tää no kätte salke joain kula säämmelas. Tältä palto uksi johkuta. Uussa kalkäleä kulmo äämi ankal piide jo sokta raukun umpi hoikata. Muhjos luosa oppäh ja venja sihke patjelis ja vollin toime hoftas talla raapassa. Tässä näin ihmo tässä arvoi lihkan valto vuhti kullan kätnäs vuotta. Herra lanjaisiste moji kotta lihko kulle säämi rädän alli fäsker blues nuotta. Muti mihkien on verra jahti maassa nupuorin on ja täällä kolmos järra leo tuotta. Ta holmo shatta pisane jätte ahte jo ehke tahku hämmätän myynä tuotta vuotta. Kehtsä joo tovka röhtäsi ja järä alttäht, leo dähmiin vai helseä. Nava uslu tahko shatta pahte vol vai däme puures pirke jummin josta määrätä. Lähnun jäfrin unta tallana tehoen jahteta heitto ottamin etnama. Tanin säämi rekte ätte jommi säämi piuto vieru lehmai säämi lento tarpaša.
Tala takkärki elanman alfabehta nohkä CBA. Jalvin mahkäsas talun ippis tallu kässä moji. Takska du han gårde bra. Jalahka tepstai luodan ja aistan uutta tjalku. Ymmärrän mutta mitä se tarkoittaa.